Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. I do want to give you a few comments that I've received recently about our programming. And this is before we get into Charles Dickens' Great Expectations, or the introduction to that book. But these are some local comments from here in the Edmond area. And this person says, "I read Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice some time ago. I thought I really understood what the book was all about until I listened to JBL's women's panel discussion programs. Wow, now I understand there's a lot more depth to the book." Here's another local comment here from Edmund. He says, "I really love JBL. The discussion on Pride and Prejudice was great." Then another local comment here says, "I really enjoy the discussion panels on JBL. And by the way, Mr. Leap, your voice is very soothing on the radio." So there's a little kudo for me and my voice. So I'm happy about that. But here's another longer comment. And this is all the way from Nigeria. And this individual writes, "I am from Nigeria. I came to know the JBL site lately, and it stirred up an unusual zeal in me for reading. Thank you, Dennis Leap, for the insight and depth of understanding you are giving the world. Your choice of words is simple, straight, and penetrating. We are enjoying the program beyond your wildest imagination. I have just finished listening to Ben Franklin and the Mathers. Keep it up." And I think that's a good reminder for everyone out there listening, is this is a podcast, and you can listen to all the podcasts. And you can all find those on SoundCloud, or you can find them at kpcg.fm. And we did the Ben Franklin programs quite a while ago. But they're still all there, and they're still very good for all of you to listen to. I also thought I might just give you a few stats from SoundCloud. I was checking it out, getting ready for today's program. And I now have 209 followers on SoundCloud, so thank you very much for following me. And then I was looking at some of the statistics, and it looks like since the beginning of the program, I have 11,892 plays on SoundCloud. So that, to me, that's about 800 plays a month. So, again, I think that's very, very good. And since it is a literature program, you know, there's not going to be a lot of audience that wants to listen to literature, but I think that's still very good numbers. And then also wanted to say to everyone on Facebook that there's 146 likes now. So just keep up that. It's great for me to know that you're out there listening, and also it's good to know some of the statistics. Well, today I want to introduce Charles Dickens' Great Expectations. Now, some people have been asking me, so why did you decide on Great Expectations and not David Copperfield? Well, it's kind of simple and selfish on my part. I have never read Great Expectations, and I wanted to do that. I have read David Copperfield, and we may do that some other time. But the best way, I think, to introduce this book is to talk some about the author. And for anybody who does not write, and it is my profession, I've been a writer since I was 23. For anybody who does not write, it is very important that you understand that every writer leaves a piece of his or her personal life, his or her thoughts, and even their emotions in their written work. And essentially, when we're reading a novel, or we're reading even a book of maybe even nonfiction, we are given a window into, well, the writer's own life and what their own interests are. And so we really do see this quite, I think, more explicit with Great Expectations than maybe even his other novels. Of course, you know, Oliver Twist is probably a good example of what he experienced as a child. But even there are some things, even in Great Expectations with Pip, that probably point to his early life as well. But here's there's a Pulitzer Prize winning author. Her name is Jane Smiley. And she's written a rather unique biography of Charles Dickens. And of course, it's a simple title, Charles Dickens: A Life. But it's the way she approaches his biography that's really interesting. And what she does is she's being a writer herself. She knows what it takes to write books and what it takes to write novels. And she actually won the Pulitzer Prize for actually recrafting the story of King Lear into a more of a modern novel. And now I have not read it, so I don't want to speak too much about that. But anyway, what she does is she works very hard in her biography to explain what many have called the mystery to Charles Dickens' amazing personality. He was a very energetic person, but he was also a creative genius. And, you know, many people have studied him over the years, and they just wonder, how did he do and accomplish what he did with his books? So it's really an interesting biography. I would really highly recommend it to you. Again, we're not going to necessarily discuss it on the radio at this time, but we may do it sometime in the future. But anyway, she does say in her biography that essentially we have to look at Dickens' writings and we have to look at his characters. And then when we do that, we really study them, then we can really get a better insight into Dickens himself. So I think that's a kind of unique approach. And, as we go on through this program, you'll see that, maybe not everyone necessarily agrees with her, but I still think it was a novel approach to a biography. But here's some facts for you. Dickens was born on February 7th, 1812. He was born in Portsmouth, England, which is a coastal town. And he died on June 9th, 1870, in Kent, England. And here's a little bit of what Smiley says about him. And it is amazing when we know details of his life, what he really accomplished beginning at 21. This is in the preface of this biography. She says, "Not only did he write 15 novels, 10 of which were 800 or more pages long, he also wrote numerous stories, articles, travel pieces, essays, letters, editorial notes, and plays. For his entire literary life, he was observed by relatives, friends, servants, acquaintances, fellow authors, and strangers who wrote about him in reviews, articles, diaries, letters, biographies, memoirs, and autobiographies." One thing I'm going to do towards the end of the program, I'm going to read you an 1861 review of Great Expectations. She goes on to say, "He was relentlessly observed by himself, sometimes sympathetically, sometimes unsympathetically." And there are a lot of times, even when I'm writing, a piece for a magazine or a piece for a website, there's sometimes you work and work and work and work and look at the article and you think, oh, this is really terrible. And when I start to get a feeling that way, I just put it away and start again the next day. But authors can be very tough on themselves. She says, "He was, in short, an object of fascination, a true celebrity, maybe the first true celebrity in the modern sense. He was a social phenomenon, a figure unique among his contemporaries, and yet representative of them as they themselves understood. Among English writers, Dickens' only peer in terms of general fame, worldwide literary stature, and essential Englishness is William Shakespeare." Now, I do think that's very interesting, and I think all the listeners out there know I have a deep love for Shakespeare. But I also really have a deep love for Dickens. I do believe Dickens is a genius. And he was a writing genius, and what he was able to accomplish and the energy he put into it is really just amazing. She goes on to say, "Both peopled the imaginative landscape in a manner almost superhuman, pouring forth characters of such number, variety, and vividness that it seems impossible they could be the products of a single mind." And, there's a lot of speculation about Shakespeare, like who was Shakespeare? Could William Shakespeare have done what he did? And, when you look at the genius of Shakespeare, people wonder, well, who was this man? And how could he have accomplished so much? But, the human mind, if it's used right, can accomplish incredible things. It says, "Both depicted English life when English life was at its most interesting and vital, and both seem to sparkle at the Center of the Life in London, though both were also adept at evoking English pastoral scenes. They share another quality, too, and that is that both remain essentially mysterious. Shakespeare, in part because so little is known of him outside of his plays, and Dickens, in part because everything that is known of him makes him all the more difficult to comprehend. And so it is really quite fascinating when you really study the whole body of his work. And there's a lot of things that he wrote. I want to go just briefly to what biography.com has to say about Dickens, and just to bring you up to speed with what some of the things that he did have to, you know, experience in his life. And, you know, a writer that experiences so many different things that he experienced, you can see why he can develop many characters. Now, there is some talk that is brought out that when Charles Dickens was writing, he would pretend he was the character. In other words, he would look at himself or listen to himself, and he tried to mimic their voices and all that. So we also know that he tried to write plays at the time, and he really was not a very good playwright. We don't remember him very much for those kind of things. But you know, he is remembered for novels like Oliver Twist and certainly Nicholas Nickleby, David Copperfield, Tale of Two Cities, which is another one of my favorites. And so we know that he was able to produce some really just some fantastic novels. Now, let's talk a little bit about his family life. And, you know, there are a lot of times he does, you know, talk about family groupings even in his novels. But it says he was the second of eight children. His father, John Dickens, was a naval clerk who dreamed of striking it rich. Charles Dickens' mother, Elizabeth Barrow, aspired to be a teacher and school director. Despite his parents' best efforts, the family remained poor. Nevertheless, they were happy in the early days. In 1816, they moved to Chatham, Kent, where young Charles and his siblings were free to roam the countryside and explore the old castle at Rochester. And so you can even see his ability to explore an environment comes out when he writes this novel, Great Expectations, because we find Pip, you know, strolling around and investigating the marshes. But listen to this. It says, in 1822, the Dickens family moved to Camden Town, a poor neighborhood in London. By then, the family's financial situation had grown dire, as John Dickens had a dangerous habit of living beyond the family's means. Eventually, John was sent to prison for debt in 1824, when Charles was just 12 years old. And so there's a lot in, you know, English history about these debtors' prisons. And essentially, you know, we could think today that they were like these jails with bars and all that. But essentially what it was, they were almost like they were in apartment buildings, and the family was living there. You know, it's almost in the debtors' prison with the father, and the father, you know, was forced to, you know, to go out and work to, you know, repay the debts. But the thing, this was such a difficult time for Dickens, because when his father was put into the debtor's prison, Charles was actually forced to leave school to work at a bootblacking factory alongside the River Thames. And so we have, you know, the stories of Oliver Twist, you know, and how he lived on the streets. And we have, you know, there's even the story of Pip here in Great Expectations, where he had been orphaned as a young boy, and he's really off kind of on his own and by himself as well, even though he's being raised by, you know, his sister, his older sister, and then her husband. But Dickens experienced some really tough things at 12. And, you know, essentially he was separated from his family, and he was there to help support the family. Now, here's what Biography says about him, biography.com. It says, looking back on the experience, Dickens saw it as the moment he said goodbye to his youthful innocence, stating that he wondered how he could be so easily cast away at such a young age. So essentially, you know, Dickens would have felt like he was an orphan, you know, being sent to a factory, and the factory was run down, it was rodent ridden, And you can almost see some of these scenes in some of Dickens' darkest novels. And so it is really kind of proves my point that when a writer writes, they might be writing about different characters, but there's an element of their own life in that writing. He said he felt abandoned and betrayed by the adults who were supposed to take care of him. Then biography.com says these sentiments would later become a recurring theme in his writing. Now, things did get a little brighter for him. Biography.com goes on to say, much to his relief, Dickens was permitted to go back to school when his father received a family inheritance and used it to pay off his debts. But when Dickens was 15, his education was pulled out from under him once again. In 1827, he had to drop out of school and work as an office boy to contribute to his family's income. And as it turned out, though, that job became an early launching point to his writing career. So when we get into Great Expectations, we know that Pip, you know, inherits this money. He doesn't know where it's from, but all of a sudden, you know, he comes out of his circumstances. There's a lot of twists and turns in Great Expectations. And, you know, he does, you know, he is really like a poor orphan. But then he also learns how to be a gentleman. And so we're not going to tell you everything today because we want you to read the book for yourself as well. But it's at this job that where he was like this office boy that Dickens began to freelance reporting at the law courts of London. And one of the things that biography.com does not bring up, but I know from reading you know, his background, is Dickens was really good at shorthand. He could sit in a courtroom and he could take the whole proceedings and not miss a word. And so he was really skilled at looking, observing, listening, paying attention. I mean, this man was really focused. And then he began to, you know, write his own sketches for magazines and newspapers under the pseudonym Boz. And then eventually he began to write sketches by Boz. Then he began to write the Pickwick Papers. And by the time he was 21, he was really became very well known. Now, I want to just go back to what Smiley has to say about this in her biography. And this is really kind of fascinating. And you can tell that Smiley does have a lot of respect for Dickens. And I think any writer that's written novels or written, you know, large volumes of work, they know how hard the writing craft is. It's not an easy job. Writing is probably one of the hardest jobs in the world, if you're going to write and write well. And Dickens really did produce art. I mean, we have to look at it that way. And we'll talk about how, before this program is over, we will talk about, how Dickens did have his detractors, and there are a lot of people didn't like Dickens. But still, I mean, his books are still very, very popular today. But Smiley says, if we see him, and she says, we really need to take a close look at Dickens. She says, if we see him as a man whose work made him rich and famous, as close to a household name as any movie star is today, that's how famous he became at a very young age. She says, then we can also see him as the first person to become a name brand. And so, I mean, he was very popular in his time. And not only did he write novels, he also, did speaking tours. And if he maybe wasn't making enough money, as a novelist, what he did then, he would go on speaking tours, and he spoke in America. And what was really funny about some of that, though, is when he came to America, you know, people read his novels, and they got this impression of him that he was this big, handsome, towering figure, and he turned out he was short and had big ears. And so when they'd go to listen to him, he didn't seem to be as appealing as his novels were. So it is, you know, just really, really fascinating. Let's talk a little bit about maybe some of his early writing. I just mentioned it just briefly. Let's see. Dickens, not only was he a writer, he also became a publisher. And So around, like I said, let's say 1858, you know, the early 60s, he published a magazine called Bentley's Miscellany. In it, he started publishing his first novel, Oliver Twist. And so that is one thing that is unique about Dickens' writing, even Tale of Two Cities. You know, there's a lot of short chapters, and the reason why they're really short chapters is because they were written for installments in the magazine. And essentially, it was a kind of a genius thing on his part to do this, because one of the things you want to, if you're going to make a long novel of 800 pages, which he did, you know, more than one of them, you have to have a lot of suspense. And by writing short chapters and giving just a little bit of information, you know, you got the people hooked, and so they couldn't wait for the next installment. So it was a great way to sell magazines. And, you know, he really became very wealthy from doing that. But his first novel, Oliver Twist, was done that way. And, of course, you know, Oliver is an orphan that's living in the streets. And this is what biography.com says about Oliver Twist. It says, the story was inspired by how Dickens felt as an impoverished child, forced to get on by his own wits and his own keep. And, of course, Dickens did experience that at 12. And so it says then, biography goes back to saying this, over the next few years, Dickens struggled to match the level of Oliver Twist's success. But then he published The Life and Adventures of Nicholas Nickleby. Then he published The Old Curiosity Shop. Then he produced Barnaby Rudge. And so he was really on his way and, you know, was really, you know, publishing. Now, of course, Tale of Two Cities is a very famous novel of his as well, and it's probably one of the ones that maybe people would remember him most for. You know, his fame, you know, took him around the world, and it is really kind of fascinating how he was known for some of these things. The one thing that I think I want to bring out just a little bit, and we're going to be taking a break here in a few minutes. But one thing I do want to say before we talk maybe a little bit of his later years is that Dickens did have his detractors. And this is written in a piece by Simon Callow. And he's actually reviewing Jane Smiley's book on Charles Dickens' life. But we have to understand that even though he became famous and very wealthy, you know, not everyone liked Dickens' writing. And here's what Simon Callow says. He says, during Dickens' lifetime and ever since, his detractors have been numerous and vocal. On the whole, they wish he would simply go away. They felt he was long-winded, unintellectual, vulgar, shallow, theatrical. His survival is incomprehensible to them and a source of great irritation. But the point is, as Callow points out, survive he does. If anything, his standing is higher now than it has ever been. His work still widely read. Every one of the novels is easily available in a good readable editions for £1 apiece. And, of course, they're a little more expensive than a pound. I know you'll be able to get Great Expectations for about $8 on Amazon. But it says, and constantly adapted into other media. In other words, they've been made into movies. And, you know, Tale of Two Cities, there's still the famous, I think it's 1950s movie, or maybe even a little bit early. It's still one of the best movies ever made on Tale of Two Cities. It says, indeed relocated into other countries and translated into other centuries. And he goes on to say, Dickens' life itself is now becoming a source of fascination to his readers. From the time of his friend Forrester's biography, 3 massive volumes of it published shortly after his death, there has never been a lack of detailed writing about either his work or his life, but the latter has only recently come into more general circulation as one of the most remarkable and disturbing of 19th century personal histories. And so again, Dickens did have, you know, quite a very interesting life. He did have a lot of fame, but there was also a lot of trauma in his life. He did tour the United States in the mid-1800s. And, of course, he went into Italy and Europe as well. He didn't publish David Copperfield until about 1849, 1850. And I think I'm going to go ahead and just take a little break now. And so we'll come back to this and just right after the break.
Is summer vacation drying your brain into a wrinkled raisin? Plunge into something different. Join Dennis Leap, host of Just the Best Literature, for a scintillating summer of reading. Drench your mind with classics such as Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice, Charles Dickens' Great Expectations, and Jules Verne's 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. Be a part of reading and discussing to build a brawny brain. JBL's Summer of Classics series begins June 26th. Just the Best Literature airs Mondays at 8 a.m. CDT on KPCG.FM and 101.3 in North Edmond, Oklahoma. Join us on Twitter at JBLiterature1 or on Facebook by searching Just the Best Literature to see news, facts, and creatively designed quotes. Also, leave comments and communicate with us. We want to hear from you. Just the Best Literature airs Mondays at 8 a.m. on KPCG.FM and 101.3 in North Edmond, Oklahoma.
Okay, we're back from the first segment, and I was just talking about when Dickens wrote David Copperfield, and that was in the mid-1800s, around 1849 to 1850. And the thing that we see in terms of the growth of a writer is he did things unique in these novels. And, of course, with David Copperfield, it was considered the first work of its kind. No one had ever written a novel that simply followed a character through his everyday life. No one had written anything like that. And so you can see that Dickens not only had a great genius for writing, he knew what would make people interested. And today we have all these reality TV shows where people just like to look into other people's daily lives. Well, guess what? Dickens knew that would work years ago. And so essentially, you know, David Copperfield is like that. He wrote into the personal experience of this young man, and it was very popular. Now, in the 1850s, Dickens did suffer some real devastating losses. One of his favorite daughters died, his father died, and he separated from his wife, Catherine Hogarth, who had 10 children together, and so it was really quite traumatic for him. But he also, at that time, met a young actress, and her name was Ellen, or Nellie, Ternan, and it seems like they had a relationship going, and so it's really quite interesting. During this time, then it's just really clear that his novels took on a really dark worldview, and then he wrote the novel Bleak House, which some still consider to be, well, one of his best novels. And essentially, what he did is he talked about the hypocrisy of British society. Then he wrote another dark novel called Little Dorrit, and it was a fictional study of how human values come in conflict with the world's brutality. And then it was around 1859 that he wrote Tale of Two Cities, and that really is, you know, a very famous book about the French Revolution. And, you know, he was really making comments on society and British society as well as French society and what it does to people. Or what it did to people. And then, around 1860, 1861, he did publish Great Expectations. And again, this book is also amazingly different because it is, the narrator is Pip, and Pip actually talks about his life from a young boy. And so it's almost like, it was really had some real creative genius to it, because it's like Pip is telling the story of Pip. So it's like you have two Pips. You have Pip that's older and looking back, and yet when you read the book and you read about Pip, you feel like you're right there with him as a young boy. And so it is, really quite a fascinating novel. Then in 1865, Dickens was in a train accident. He never fully recovered from that. And then he was really not well, but he continued to, you know, on his tour till 1870. And then essentially what happened on June 9th, 1870, Dickens had a stroke, and he, at age 58, he died at his place at Gad's Hill Place. So anyway, that was, you know, quite a shock to the literary world at the time. So that's a little bit about, you know, Dickens' life. Now what I'd like to do is before we get into a discussion, a little bit more of a discussion on the book, I do want to talk to you about and or maybe read to you sections from The Atlantic's review of Great Expectations. And this was written, I mean, Atlantic is a very famous magazine even still today, but it they offered reviews of, you know, book reviews, and they had essentially, they had reviewed all of Dickens' writing. And you have to understand that in the 1860s, by the 1860s, Dickens was not only very popular in England, he was very popular in America. And so you know, people would flock to see him when he did his tours. But here, Great Expectations was just released. And in September 1861, The Atlantic produced this book review, and they listed it under culture. And I think it's interesting to go back and hear what people were saying about this book as they were reading it. Remember, Great Expectations, just like Oliver Twist and Tale of Two Cities, it was written as installments in a magazine. And so essentially what was happening at that time is magazine sales for Dickens were dropping off. And so that's when he came up with the idea for Great Expectations. He knew that some of his prior novels had really helped to, well, really accelerate and increase the sales of his magazines. And so he came out with Great Expectations to help him begin to sell. And again, he was a genius at how he could craft characters and craft scenes and craft situations that would just fascinate people and would make them want to read more and more and more. And you get this feeling when you read this review from Atlantic. Again, this is from 1861 or September 1861. And this is in that Atlantic issue from that month. Here's how the review opens. It says, "The very title of this book indicates the confidence of conscious genius." And so here, this whoever wrote this, they don't give the name in this, but whoever wrote it, they saw Dickens as a writer of conscious genius. He was aware that he was a genius. "And a new aspirant for public favor, such as a title, might have been a good device to attract attention. But the most famous novelist of the day, watched by jealous rivals and critics, could hardly have selected it had he not inwardly felt the capacity to meet all the expectations he raised." And so there's just a little smattering that we know that he was the most famous novelist at that time. This is in the mid-1800s. He was watched by jealous rivals. You know, there are other authors would probably have liked to have been as famous as he was and weren't. You know, any novelist or any author is going to draw critics. I know some articles I've drawn, written recently, I've drawn my critics, and you know, that's just the way it is in this world. And so, listen to this. The review continues. It says, "We have read it," meaning Great Expectations. "We have read it, as we have read all Mr. Dickens' previous works, as it appeared in installments, and can testify to the felicity, or to the happiness with which expectation was excited and prolonged to the series of surprises which accompanied the unfolding of the plot of the story." And so it is really fascinating that you know, Dickens is really a genius at, you know, revealing a plot, but also building suspense, and primarily to sell magazines, but also to sell great literature as well. Now, this, they go on to say, in no other of his romances has the author succeeded so perfectly in at once stimulating and baffling the curiosity of his readers. He stirred the dullest minds to guess the secret of his mystery, but so far as we have learned, the guesses of his most intellectual readers have been almost as wide of the mark as those of least apprehensive. It has been all the more provoking to the former class that each surprise was the result of art and not of trick, for a rapid review of previous chapters has shown that the materials of a strictly logical development of the story were freely given. So remember, this was printed in installments, but Dickens knew what he was doing. He was crafting the story, but also crafting, it's like he had control over his readership and getting their interest and keeping it. And all great writers can do this. Now the review keeps going on and saying, even after the first, second, third, and even fourth of these surprises gave their pleasing electric shocks to intelligent curiosity, the denouement was still hidden, though confidentially foretold. The plot of the romance is therefore universally admitted to be the best that Dickens has ever invented. Its leading events are, as we read the story, consecutively, artistically necessary, yet at the same time, the processes are artistically concealed. We follow the movement of a logic of passion and character, the real premises of which we detect only when we are startled by the conclusions. So I think it's fascinating what this reviewer is doing. He's talking about the book, but he's not revealing it. And it's like, there's no spoiler alert here. And so that's what I'm trying to do with you as well, is I want you to read the book. And though I'm sure there are a lot of you out there already know the story, and my wife, who's going to be on one of the panels, she taught this book in 7th and 8th grade literature, so she really knows. She knows the story, even, and I've told her I don't want to hear it. I don't want to know. I'm reading it myself. But anyway, there's a lot of twists and turns in the book that just keep you going. So this review keeps going and says, the plot of Great Expectations is also noticeable as indicating, better than any of his previous stories, the individuality of Dickens' genius. So they really, the Atlantic is really praising him. Here's just a few more paragraphs. It says, in Great Expectations, on the contrary, Dickens seems to have attained the mastery of powers which formerly more or less mastered him. He has fairly discovered that he cannot, like Thackeray, he was another author at that time, narrate a story as if he were a mere looker on, a mere knowing observer of what he describes and represents, and he has therefore taken observation simply as the basis of his plot and his characterization. I'll just skip down to this paragraph. Everything drifts to its end as in real life. In Great Expectations, there is shown a power of external observation finer and deeper even than Thackeray's, and yet owing to the presence of other qualities, the general impression is not one of objective reality. And so, in other words, you're just caught in the action, you're caught in what's happening, in the novel, and you want to just keep going and to decide or to figure out what's really going to happen with Pip. And so it is really quite interesting that way. Now, here's a few more just comments. It says, the book is indeed an artistic creation and not a mere succession of humorous and pathetic scenes, and demonstrates that Dickens is now in the prime, not in the decline of his powers. So remember, this book is like one of the last few that he produced, and so he was getting older, and of course, he did die then at the age of 58, just almost like right after, within 4 or 5 years of, the writing or the release of Great Expectations. Okay, I just want to, just one more little comment here in terms about the characters, and from other programs, if you've been following me regularly, I really believe that, before you even read a novel or a play, that you need to try and familiarize yourself with the characters And I don't think there is, let's say, not like a list in a play. There's not a list of characters, I don't think, in the Penguin edition. But even you could get online and just find a list of the characters and then, you know, look them up. But and then just kind of review them before you even start reading. But here's what this Atlantic Review says about the characters and the genius of Dickens and how he crafted them. He says, individually, they will rank among the most original of the author's creations. Magwitch. Of course, we know Magwitch is the criminal that catches him at the gravesite. There's Joe Gargery, which was his brother-in-law. Jaggers and Wemmick, Pip and Herbert, Wopsle, Pumblechook, and the aged Miss Haversham, Estella, and Biddy are personages which the most assiduous readers of Dickens must pronounce positive additions to the characters his rich and various genius has already created. And so there's a few of the characters that they talk about in this review. And so again, it is amazing that we can go back and read this review of this book, and we still have it for our time. Okay, here's the last couple paragraphs. It says, altogether, we take great joy in recording our conviction that Great Expectations is a masterpiece. We have never sympathized in the mean delight which some critics seem to experience in detecting the signs which subtly indicate decay of power in creative intellects. We sympathize still less in the stupid and ungenerous judgments of those who find a still meaner delight in willfully asserting that the last book of a popular writer is unworthy of the genius which produced his first. In our opinion, Great Expectations is a work which proves that we may expect from Dickens a series of romances far exceeding in power and artistic skill the productions which have already given him such a preeminence among the novelists of the age. And so that's how they ended, how Atlantic ended their discussion of the book, or the review of the book. And so again, I agree with that, and I'm hoping that when you listen to that, that's just going to inspire you even more to, read this great, great work of art. Now, one of the things that I want to just talk about briefly is we need to understand, about the book, and it's really... There is a genre of book that's written after. And so Great Expectations is an example of what literary instructors would call a Bildungsroman. And again, let me repeat that. It's an example of a novel that is called Bildungsroman. And what that means is it's a special kind of novel that focuses on the psychological and moral growth of its main character. And so... even though you're going to run into, a lot of characters in this book, you're going to run into Joe Gargery, you're going to run into, Magwitch, you're going to run into Orlick, you're going to run into all these different characters. Basically, the novel is about one character, and it's about Pip. And, of course, we know that his formal name is Philip Pirrip, but as a young boy, he couldn't say that, so he called himself Pip. But essentially... this book focuses on his psychological and moral growth through his life. And we are introduced to him by the time he's, well, maybe 8 or 9. And then it takes us through his life and what he goes through to grow up to become a man, who he falls in love with, the people he becomes intertwined with. It also, revolves around the trials and the tests and, the moral choices he had to make. And but essentially, the thing that's so fascinating about the novel is, he's able to communicate about his childhood as an adult man, but you still feel like you're dealing with a child, or you can see it through a child's eyes. And so it just reveals the inventive genius of Dickens. I mean, essentially, I think, this is my own feeling, is you're getting a lot of Dickens thinking on things when you're when you're reading about Pip. And so it's really a unique way to put together. So Pip is the narrator, Pip is the main character, and you know, he's talking about his life. And essentially, you have to really work hard to focus on the book, concentrate on the book, because he's giving you moral instruction. And you know, last time we talked about Pride and Prejudice, and you know how so many people think it's just a romance novel. And I think Elizabeth Clark, when she came on the panel, she kind of blew some of our listeners out of the water when she said, I don't think it's a romantic novel. I think it's a novel about character or growing in character. And, you know, the English at that time, you know, with and Jane Austen's time, and I think also, you know, Dickens was also trying to instruct people about life and how to deal with life. And it really is about character. And but it's just a unique way of seeing things. And of course, you have to understand, I mean, there are other characters in the book, but you have to accept that Pip is far more the most important character in Great Expectations. If we just throw some literary terms around, he is the protagonist. And, you know, he is the one that, well, his actions really do make up the main plot of the novel. But then, you know, Dickens is able to introduce other characters in, and almost there's some plots, there's different things to consider. You know, we certainly want to consider the moral character of Magwitch. You know, when we meet him, you know, he's just escaped from jail and he's trying to get an iron cut off his leg. And then he does some other things. He comes back later in the novel and we're all shocked by what he does. And so it is really quite interesting. But it's Pip that ties everything together. And in some ways, like I said, Pip is really a lot like Dickens. And I think Dickens, you know, certainly probably experienced a lot about that as well, or the same kind of things. Now it's also interesting, you know, Pip does fall in love in the novel. And he does want to marry the first love of his life, and she really, well, she dumps him. She doesn't like that. And, of course, I'm talking about the character of Stella. And then Pip wants to go later in life. He finally realizes that it's not going to work out with Stella, and then he wants to marry someone else, and then that doesn't work out either. So it is really kind of fascinating. Then, I think Pip does talk for the times that he was living in, or the times Dickens was living in. And essentially, you know, Pip does want to become wealthy. And essentially, he inherits wealth. But he doesn't know how to live up to his wealth. So he has to go get more education to learn to live as a gentleman. So, you know, we know he starts out the novel with maybe not the greatest character. And you know, he's has all these moral dilemmas he's facing. He feels guilty, you know, stealing from his sister's essentially her pantry for the criminal Magwitch. You know, so it's like he can't get over some of those things. So it really is a study in human nature. It's really a study in moral character. It really is a view. This book is really a great view into English society. And, of course, some parts of it are very funny, but other parts of it are very, very sad. And so in many ways, you know, Shakespeare would do the same thing with his plays. You know, he would give you a very tough scene, and then he'd give you a very comedic scene. And essentially, you know, this is exactly what Dickens does also with Pip. So we're going to be able to get into this book, and there's a lot more we have to say about it. And so if you have not yet bought the book, you really do need to get it. And like I said, you can get us a really good Penguin edition. That's the copy we want you to have. Get the Penguin edition on Amazon, and that's about $8. And again, it's one of those books. I mean, you could go to a library and check it out. But when we talk on these things on the panels, we are going to use the Penguin edition. So next time we're going to be using the 60-plus panel. Also for this book, because it is so fascinating and interesting, I'm going to bring back young men's panel of students here from Herbert W. Armstrong College. I'm going to bring Jack Wood back, and I'm going to bring George Haddad back, and we're going to have a special men's panel to talk about this book and what it means for, let's say, college students and how a younger person would look at the book. So it looks like we're running out of time right now, so I would very much like to hear what you have to say about our Summer of Classics series. We still have After Great Expectations. We still have 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. And I'm hoping to bring Sarah Evans back on our panel for that one. She will also be on the panel for, Great Expectations as well. So next time we will begin our 60-plus panel discussion of Great Expectations. And so I'm sure you'll be looking forward to that. So please write me any comments you may have to jbl@pcog.org. You can also follow JBL on Twitter at jbliterature1. You can also follow JBL on Facebook. Simply search for Just the Best Literature. And remember, you can leave me a comment at Facebook. And so until next time, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.